You don't need to be ripped. You just need the right shirt. Epic Fits gives you a clean, confident silhouette. Snug on the arms, soft on the skin, generous where it counts. And with deals like $15 per tee, they won't break the bank. Visit epicfits.com today. Epic Fits. T-shirts that get it.
Okay, everyone. On today's episode of Something Major, we're going to talk quarterfinal review and semifinal preview. So with that, let's get into the episode. All right, everyone, welcome back to Something Major. As you know, we're calling this Something Major throughout the Australian Open. We are dropping episodes after each round. I'm joined, as always, I got Steve Johnson, John Isner, Charlie Fox, and his team at SIFT. No Jack Sock today. We believe he is deep sea fishing right now. We haven't seen any photos or evidence. I don't picture him as a fisherman. I don't think he could catch a fish without any help, but he'll be back on the pod in 2 days. So we will ask him how his morning out on the deep seas went, and we'll see if he caught a fish. Last episode, we brought up, or Isner brought up, running the hand through the hair and guys high-fiving afterwards. People agreed with us on YouTube. So everyone's in agreement there. Thank you, John, for bringing that up. I feel like that's been on a lot of people's minds for a long time. We finally kind of brought it up, and people agree with us. We've got two more episodes coming out this week. We've got another one coming out on Friday. We're going to preview the semifinals. And then on Sunday, we are going to review the finals. And then also later this week, we have a Stan Wawrinka interview coming out. We interviewed him a few weeks ago. We've been sitting on it. It's going to come out at some point later this week. So it's going to be a good one. We are finally having a Grand Slam champion on this show. Also, to tease you guys, we have a Tommy Paul interview that we've got stored, and an Ons Jabeur interview that we have banked. So we've got some good interviews coming out. If also, next episode in 2 days, we're going to answer some questions. So if you guys have any Aussie Open questions, drop them in the YouTube comments. That's where we're going to pull the questions from this week, and we'll get to those on Friday. So let's get to it. The match that everyone was talking about, the one that the world highlighted, the toughest quarterfinal of all time, Novak Djokovic versus Carlos Alcaraz. Djokovic prevails in four sets, 4-6, 6-4, 6-3, 6-4. It was a battle. I know the sets don't seem that close, but it was an absolute war. Fourth set was a physical set. Djokovic shaving break points left and right. Stevie, are you surprised with that result? I know Djokovic is my guy. Carlos was your guy in our draft, but my guy gets through. Take us through the match.
Yeah, had I known there was going to be some type of outside controversy surrounding Novak to help get the engines rolling, I probably would have taken Novak in the snake draft if I had the choice, because getting him with any type of edge, whatever it be, you know, manufactured or, you know, actual, you know, something that's happened between him and another player is a scary Novak. When he is locked in like this, he is playing so well. And, you know, when Carlos, sometimes in these big matches, Carlos doesn't play his best tennis, as I think all of us expect these guys to every single day. They're out there. We just think they're not human when they're out there on the tennis court, and they're just going to play their best in the biggest moments. And I think Carlos just had an off day, and it's an unfortunate time to have an off day. A lot of unforced errors, didn't defend his second serve very well. But ultimately, Novak raised his level. He's a 24-time slam champion and has won this event 10 times. So he knows exactly what it takes to get through these types of matches. And his experience showed today. And I think that ultimately was the most important piece to this puzzle.
It seemed like if he didn't win the fourth set here, it feels like he wasn't winning the fifth set. John, did you see it that way or not? Because I did.
No, I didn't see it that way. I mean, that's not to say that he would have been the favorite going into the fifth set, but I think he would have had a puncher's chance to win that match in five. When you get to a fifth set, as you guys know, like, you know, the finish line's near, especially there's a situation, you know, there's a tiebreaker for the fifth set. So I think he would have been able to lock in, have adrenaline, carry him a very long way. Again, I don't think he would have been possibly the favorite in the fifth, but credit to him for closing it out in four, an incredible effort as you mentioned, one of the biggest quarterfinal Grand Slam matches we've ever seen. Novak actually said it's one of the most special matches he's ever played on Rod Laver Arena, and he's won that tournament 10 times. So he was dialed in for the match. He's obviously super motivated. Again, I think I brought this up, and so we talked about this. This is a big reason he brought Murray onto the team, to give him something different to try to get past Sinner and Alcaraz specifically, who are, you know, the, not ranking wise, but you, most people think are the top two players in the game. So incredible effort. But again, like doubt Novak at your own peril. I don't know why anyone would. Obviously, he's getting older. You think maybe his time has passed. He's not going to be winning many Grand Slams, but he's an all-time great. Just as you see all-time greats in other sports, they're going to rise to the occasion no matter the circumstance. And he did that in the quarterfinals against Alcaraz. It was ridiculous to see.
He's got basically every record, as we know, and he is trying to become the first player ever to defeat a number three, a number two, and a number one to win a title. He plays the number two in Zverev now. Sinner would have to win his semifinal to even have that opportunity. But there is maybe one more thing that Novak hasn't accomplished that he could accomplish if the stars align and he does that. So we'll see if he can do that. He did have the leg wrap during the match. I don't know if you guys, like, first set got the leg wrap. It seemed like a non-issue. He, after the match, was kind of like, hey, I had a similar injury a couple years ago. Again, watching the match, it didn't seem to bother him. You see him limping around at all, or you think it's just a kind of preventative leg taping?
I think it's a bit of both, and I think Carlos got it seemed like he got a bit annoyed with it.
He did. That's what I thought.
Yeah, it was strange. He usually is so dialed in,
which is like unlike him. But I don't know if I don't know. You know, I would assume they have a good relationship. Obviously, I haven't been around the locker room in a long time, so. But Novak, yeah, after getting leg tape, Carlos, you can kind of see he was a little agitated or annoyed, whatever you want to call it. But I mean, it's great for tennis to see Novak still at the top of the game. And like John said a few seconds ago, count him out at your own peril. Like, do not count Novak out ever until he stops playing tennis. Then you can count him out. But when he is in the draw, he is still going to be a top five favorite, no doubt.
Spot on. The other quarterfinal in that section, Sasha Zverev versus our boy, Tommy Paul. Tommy let this slip. As you guys saw, he served for the first set, lost it in the buster, served for the second set, ends up winning the third set, losing the fourth set. This is one that is probably a tough one to swallow for Tommy, knowing that he could have been up two sets to love. You never know how a match plays out. I don't, you know, if he just wins the third set anyway, but this is tough. Tommy outplayed him at least the first two sets. Should have at least won one of the sets. I know people sometimes lose your serving for a set, but is there thoughts on this? Did Tommy let this slip away? Did Zverev just play better and edge him out? Take us through it.
Yeah, I think he did let it slip away. I think as you mentioned, at the very least, they should have been even after two sets. But he was down two sets to love. So that was tough to swallow for him. But look, credit to him for coming back and winning a very easy third set. But then he went down easily in the fourth. I mean, probably physically, mentally was a bit dejected after losing those first two sets. Didn't seem to bother him in the third, but he got steamrolled in the fourth. So I think he's going to be ruining this missed opportunity. I think at the very least, again, he could have been in a fifth set with Zverev, and anything goes at that point. But served for both sets, lost the tiebreakers pretty easily the first and second set. It's just tough. I mean, the guy, he's like a return bot. You know, he breaks serve so much. I think at one point in the first set when he broke to go up 6-5, they said that it was like his 37th break of serve in the Aussie Open.
That's a good year for you, John.
Yeah, I know, exactly. But he wasn't able to close it out. So certainly tough for him. He did seem to be the better player. He was winning a lot of the protracted rallies out there. Very physical. We know how good of a shape he's in. But Zverev was tough out. Credit to Sasha for sticking with it and really playing two great tiebreakers in the first and second sets.
Yeah, he dominated those. Shout out to Tommy for even winning the third set. If I served for the first set and the second set and lost him, I would have mentally gone away and completely tanked the third set and flown home. He actually came back and won it. He will be top 10 when the new rankings come out, even if Ben wins the tournament and Tommy doesn't become top 10, Tommy will be top 10. You know what? I'm sure he's going to look at this event as a success, making the quarterfinals. You excited for him to be top 10, SJ, our boy, friend of the pod?
Yeah, I mean, it's unbelievable to watch Tommy kind of just steadily rise in the rankings, be a fixture in the top 20 the last couple of years, top 15, and rightfully so. He's earned it. He's very consistent, and hopefully he, you know, can get to the top 10 and then just stay there. But I don't know what I think ultimately, but I think having Sasha kind of being, again, this is a crazy thought, a bit of an afterthought now at some of these slams, you know, just with Carlos and Yannick and these guys winning them all, I feel like his demeanor, his comfortability on the court is exponentially better than it was, you know, 3 or 4 years ago when he was talked about at every slam as being, you know, a heavy favorite or someone that can do it. You know, getting broken and then, you know, breaking right back in those moments, I feel like is something that he's really improved on. Like he's not getting frustrated when he gets broken at 5-all in the first. He's just kind of keeps his head down, goes to the bench, gets to return a serve at 5-6 and breaks. And he is, I feel like, more comfortable maybe in his own skin in those moments now, which I think is a very good attribute to have if he is going to hoist this trophy. John knows him the best. I don't know how you feel about that. Just, I feel like watching him over the years, his demeanor and his overall just comfortability on the court has changed in a great way. Like, I think he's a much better tennis player now than he was a few years ago.
Well, the real test is now. He's 1-12 against top 5 players in Grand Slams. So we'll see if what Stevie just said, like, is he Sasha Zverev 2.0 and more comfortable, and can he get a win over Djokovic? And then if he does that, you know, maybe most likely he's Sinner in the final. You agree with Stevie, John? Or
yeah. No, I do. I think that's a good point. He's had some really, really close calls in Grand Slams. We know that the U.S. Open, all those years ago against Thiem, he served for the championship. The French Open against Alcaraz last year, those two specifically. It doesn't seem that he's let those results rattle him at all. He had the unlucky event where he rolled his ankle against Rafa deep in that second set. It's like already 3 hours in at the French Open. So he's had a bit of tough luck in some really big moments, but doesn't seem that it's bothered him. If anything, it seems that it's fueling him to eventually get over that finish line and win a Grand Slam. We'll see if it can be done. His road is not easy. Has to beat the greatest player of all time, and then most likely the number one player in the world. See what he can do. But it's a great semifinal lineup we have.
Yep. All right, quarterfinal preview. The next one, Shelton beats Sonego. We were all over this, right? Just saying Shelton's going to will his way to a victory, which he seemingly did, 6-4, 7-5, 4-6, 7-6. Also, last week, Sonny the King, we played his stuff. We talked about Quarantine Moutet. Have you guys heard his stuff? It's better than Sonny the King's. Dude, it's like French rap, but it's...
You had that dial. You had that queued up, Sam.
I have no idea what he's saying, but how good is that?
I did listen to a bit of it last night. It was it popped up, and I just don't know what they're saying, but it's great. It's got good rhythm.
I feel like I can listen to that. If I take my kids to school, I can't really listen to rap, but if it's French rap, I could listen to it. It's got such a good beat to it. I'm pumping him to number one musicians on the tennis tour.
Okay, ahead of Chapo and the Bryan Brothers?
No, it's Moutet, Sonny the King, Bryan Brothers, Chapo. That's my current order. We'll see if we find anyone else's music. Anyway, Shelton beats Sonego. Shelton's just a big match player. John, you said it last week. The guy just shows up. He's a winner. He was not losing this match. Were you impressed with how he played?
I'm very impressed with how he played. I'm super impressed with, again, how he shows up in the big tournaments, yes, but the big moments in the match. When the match against Musetti was on his racket, 6-5, fourth set tiebreaker, Ben serving. What does he do with the inside-out forehand? 100% full commitment inside-out winner to beat Musetti in a very, very tight situation. It's a lot of players might decel there, not hit a great shot, hit in the middle of the court, miss it in the net, miss it wide, something. Then he does the exact same thing against another Italian, Sonego, 6-4, in the four-set tiebreaker, serving, got into a bit of a rally, ran around a backhand, hit an inside-out forehand to win the match. So in the big moments when the match is on his racket, he doesn't shy away from that. If anything, he accelerates more with his racket, which is an incredible quality to be able to pull that off in a big, big moment, especially, you know, round of 16, Grand Slam, quarterfinal Grand Slam. So credit to him. He's got that moxie that a lot of the best players have. So it's been a great, 10, 11 days down in Melbourne for him so far.
I feel like that's what the best players do. They hit the same shot no matter the score. If it's the first point of the match or it's 6-5, 30 all in the fifth, same shot. And Ben does that. And that's probably why he's already made two semifinals in his short career.
You can train that a little bit, but you can't really teach that. You sort of have to just have it. Obviously, he's built up some confidence by making it, you know, this far to the round 16 to the quarterfinals. But you get in that situation, it's very easy to decel and you know, kind of, in a sense, choke a little bit. But he doesn't do that. He rises to the occasion.
It's kind of like, is it Deion Sanders who's like, he is him? Like, he's that guy kind of thing, that saying? Like, he just has it. Whatever it is, like, Ben just, like, has it. He's going to be tested in the next one, though. Sinner just absolutely runs through Dimenauer. 6-3, 6-2, 6-1. John and I were all over this. Stevie, is Sinner back? I know the previous match, he didn't warm up, a little sick, but now just rolling through the hometown boy and Dimenauer so easily. Is he back on track, and is this tournament his to lose, essentially, at this point?
Yeah, I'm not really sure what happened in the previous match with the no warm-up, with the fatigue kind of thing, which is unlike Sinner. I don't feel like I've ever seen him get tired, but I feel like just with the way the draw has worked out, I feel like it is his tournament to lose at this point because of just it. No offense to Ben, but you know, I'd rather be playing Ben in a semis than Novak and Zverev little section. So, but this was just one-way traffic, start to finish. Not sure how nervous or if there was any outside factors that Alex didn't get the body going, you know, getting to that home crowd. Like, you know, I talked about a couple of days ago that he needed to get the home crowd into it and he needed to get into it early. And that just didn't happen. It was a smothering beatdown from start to finish. And if you can get an hour, 48 minute match, 3-2-1 in the semi or quarters of a slam to make a semi, that's a good day. That's a great day. And I think that puts a lot of question marks to bed for Sinner and how he was feeling against Rune. So, I think he is going to be the favorite now going forward, just, you know, obviously based on being number one in the world and just having potentially a relatively smoother section of the draw.
And how about some of these stats for Sinner? 9 consecutive wins, first top 10 players, 19 consecutive Grand Slam wins for Sinner on hard courts. He's won 4 of his last 5 tournaments. And these aren't tournaments which we used to win. These little 250s.
Atlanta, Newport.
Right? He's winning Cincy, US Open, Shanghai, ATP, like real tournaments. Like the guy is on a run right now. And just when you maybe thought he was slowing down or had a little hiccup in the round of 16, he just gets right back on the tracks and he's looking good. And he plays Shelton in the semis. Shelton's got his hands full. But like John noted, like Shelton is a big match player. I don't think Shelton is actually intimidated by Sinner.
No, not at all.
I think he's going to go out there and just be like, you know what? I'm going to be hitting big serves. I'm going to like red line on forehands. He's beat him before. And I think you agree, John, will that give him a little belief? I don't think he's scared.
No, totally. He's going to look, he's got a much better serve than Dimenauer, I've been told. That's how you pronounce his name. Someone on Twitter was all over me because I've been mispronouncing it.
Twitter people hate how we pronunciate like everyone's name. By
they
the way.
They can't stand it. This one guy was all chill. Over.
We're going to keep pronouncing it the wrong way. So just
we're trying our best,
okay.
Everyone.
I'll say Alex, but he's got more firepower than Alex, obviously. He's going to hold his serve a lot more, of course. He might get overwhelmed by Sinner. He's playing that well, but Ben's not going to be intimidated at all. And as you mentioned, Sam, he's going to redline a little bit. And I'm certain the game plan going into it is, all right, you might have to redline. Getting into protracted rallies with Sinner from the back of the court is probably not going to pan out well for Ben over the course of 3 out of 5 sets. So the game plan is, in my mind, pretty simple. Hold your serve. Keep some scoreboard pressure on Sinner. When it gets to the big moments, go for your shot. See what happens. Roll the dice that way.
It sounds so easy when John just says to hold your serve for some reason.
It does sound – obviously, I had a good serve, but Ben's got a great serve. He's got one of the best serves for in sure. the game. And so he can take the racket out of center's hands if he has a good serving day. Look, I mean, but a lefty serving to center's backhand is not that easy. I mean, center's completely dialed in right now. His last five sets, going back to the Runa match, were like 6-3, 6-2, 6-2, 6-1, 6-3. I mean, like absurd. So he's on a complete roll. Physically, he's fine. I think he put those questions to bed, as Stevie mentioned. So Ben's up against it, but Ben's a physical beast as well. So he's going to leave it all out there. It's not often you get a chance to play in a Grand Slam semifinal. So Ben's up to the challenge, but he's certainly the underdog.
Yeah. I expect Ben to hit some second serves tomorrow, like 25% of his second serves. I expect him to hit them like first serves, honestly. I think that's the kind of like red line of chances he needs to take to beat Sinner. All right, we're going to move on to the women. We haven't talked about the women yet. We're going to touch on it. First one, big upset in my mind. I mean, everyone's mind, maybe not massive, but Paula Badosa beats Coco Gauff. Coco, I had her winning the tournament. She has looked phenomenal for the last kind of end of the year and then heading into this year. You know, she won the year-end finals for the women, won the United Cup with Fritz, was cruising in the Australian Open, and loses to Paula Badosa 7-5, 6-4. Coco looked a little off. But credit to Badosa for winning this. Stevie, was this as big of an upset as maybe I'm making it out to be right now?
It's definitely an upset for sure. But watching the match, watching the highlights, we all know that Coco's forehand can sometimes go off and just not be there. And she had a ton of unforced errors. I think it was close to 28 on her forehand today. And that's not a recipe for success when, you know, a big piece of her game, a weapon of hers, goes off and goes sideways. And it's great to see Badosa back. I mean, she has dealt with some serious injuries, wasn't sure if she was going to come back. And now she's back in a slam semi. So happy for her to get through that. But, you know, I'm definitely bummed for Coco. You know, would have loved to seen her get through the end and have a chance to play for another final, because she is a dynamic, exciting player to watch.
It's crazy to me that Badosa's been as high as 2 in the world, and this is her first ever Grand Slam semifinal. Usually, to get to 2 in the world, you've
surprising,
like sometimes won a major, at least final. But for her to make her first semi is like a strange stat. But kudos to her. But Coco also said too, like a quote: "I'm obviously disappointed, but I'm not completely crushed. I feel like I'm on the road to the right path." Even though I lost today, I'm in an upward trajectory. And she's correct. She's been playing great. She's 20 years old, I believe. I looked at it earlier. I think this was her 6th Australian Open. She's 20 years old. I think you two had played 0 Australian Opens when you were 20, probably. I had maybe played 1 or 2. But as you know, she was so good when she was like 14, 15 years old.
Insane.
Look, she's still improving, and she's going to be a threat, and she's got a great chance to win a major probably for the next 10 years. We had Sabalenka beat Polychenkova 6-2, 2-6, 6-3. Is Sabalenka basically the Novak of the women down in Australia when it comes to like Australia? You know, she's got 19 wins in a row in Australia. John, she's on a run down there. She's obviously confident. She loves it. Do you see her keep going? Is she going to make 21 wins in a row down there and win her third?
Yeah, I mean, she's the prohibitive favorite right now. I'm not going to give her Novak status yet, but if she wins her third Aussie Open, it'll be, of course, extremely impressive. Third in a row. You're right. Third in a row. She has a pretty favorable, I think, semifinal matchup. She probably would have been happy to see Badosa across the other side of the net instead of Coco Gauff. But look, she's still going to have to play the match and win. She certainly is a favorite going for 3 in a row. She's got a bit of an aura of invincibility down there in Melbourne. So she's been taking care of business pretty easily, and it's been impressive to watch.
Do you think these two are really good friends? I don't know if you've paid attention, but like they both kind of have fun, bubbly personalities. They do a lot of like TikToks, Instagrams together. Sabalenka, major champion, one in the world. Badosa, this is somewhat new for her. Do you think playing a friend in a semifinal, a massive match, probably the biggest match that Badosa's ever played in, does that favor the the higher ranked player or the lower ranked player when you're playing a friend in a big match? Or is it just no favorability at all?
I would say no favorability. I think it's just one of those things. We've all done it, obviously, playing you guys. You know, when I'm playing you guys, you just put your friendship aside for however long that is. You go out there, you battle, you're bummed out if you lost, and you're happy if you won, but you're also bummed out for your buddy that, you know, that just lost. So it's one of those tricky things, but you got to just put it aside for a couple hours. And it's just one of those things. Like it's inevitable. Sometimes matches are easier to lose than others. But it is going to be a tricky one, but I think they'll be fine. They're going to go out there and battle, and it's going to be great tennis.
We had Iga Świątek beat Emma Navarro 6-1, 6-2. Shout out to Emma Navarro before I get into this. She went to Australia, lost first round in Brisbane, went to Adelaide, lost. She got a bye, then won a round, then lost. So she went into the Australian Open going 1-2 on the year. She then battled in Australia and won four straight matches in four sets, like a 7-5 in the third, 6-4 in the third, 7-5 in the third. Like, I don't think she couldn't have been that confident going into the major. And for her to get to a quarter after that, a bad start for her that's impressive. So good job for her for getting to the quarters. Unfortunately, she ran into Iga Świątek, who has just been crushing people left and right. She won an hour, 29 minutes, 6-1, 6-2. Iga she just looks like a machine out there. Kind of like how Rafa and Alcaraz are just mentally locked in all the time. That's Iga. She steps on the court. She's on a mission. The mission is to beat the opponent as badly as she can. And she looked really good out there. I know we talked about Sabalenka maybe being the favorite, but after watching that, I like Iga to win the tournament now.
Yeah, I was watching a bit of her match against Emma when they were replaying it. And to me, Iga's secret sauce is her movement. She moves better than anyone on the WTA Tour. It's absolutely insane what she can do out of the corners on the court. And she seems to be in tip-top shape, hitting the ball with extreme confidence. Every return of serve is just a Mach 10 return. She was all over Emma in that match. But back to your point about Emma, incredibly impressive. I'm glad you brought that up. Going into the Aussie Open with, as you mentioned, probably not much confidence. And then she's playing a friend of hers, another college tennis player in the first round where she's the big favorite. All the pressure's on her against Peyton Stearns. I don't know if you guys remember that match. Peyton served for the match in the first round. What she did against Peyton Stearns was really impressive. And then she gutted through three more matches in three sets, clearly not playing her best tennis. But she ran up against a buzzsaw in Iga. I know you're gonna mention Madison Keys coming up next, but it certainly looks like the two favorites, number one, right now with the people left in the draw, and number two, Iga Świątek, are going to play with Sabalenka and Iga.
Yeah, and they also had a bit of drop shot controversy in this match. It was kind of a crucial point. It was 2-2 in the second set. Emma had a little momentum kind of coming back. She hit a good drop shot. Iga ran up, you know, got to the drop shot. They said she got there on time. It was close. The replay that we saw on the TV clearly showed she didn't get there. The VAR in Australia wasn't working. It seems like the Australian Open's had a bit of an issue with the VAR. What does that stand for, by the way?
Video assisted review, I think.
Video assisted review. Okay. It seems like it's been a little off at the Australian Open. I've seen a few things on the internet of balls that were out that were called in, and vice versa. Now this double fault. Does the Australian Open need to get their techie guys on this and tweak it a bit?
They need to figure that out, because we are way too deep into the technology world to not be getting things like this correct, especially in these big moments. I feel like it would take 10 seconds. Look at the, like, oh, it bounced twice. You know, we have Hawkeye Live. We do all these things. We can get everything right at this point. And it does not need to take, it's that long. It is black and white. It's cut and dry. Didn't bounce, you know, it bounced twice, like point over, like let's get to the bottom of this. Let's get it right. It shouldn't take that long. So it's a bit of a bummer for sure for Australia. And I hope they can figure it out, because you don't want this to happen in the finals of a match, you know, break point and a fifth set or something crazy where it's like could determine the tournament rather than just getting the call correct.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but do they not have electronic let calling at this tournament?
It's a company that either like went bankrupt or something, and it is like not down there, like I guess, or not on all the courts. It's a bit of a miss right now. It's a bit of a mystery. I think they should go back very old school, having somebody sitting in a chair with their hand on their neck.
Yes, like, thank you.
I think we should go back to that. Just put them in harm's way at all times.
Absolutely, Stevie. Totally agree with you. They need to bring that back. You can't miss. It's a good job to have. You just go like this.
They're like sitting there like this, and they're just like, and then they sit back. They just watch the point. You know,
thank you.
Like,
I'm glad you brought that up. Bring that back. Bring that back. Bring back the old school, and it's also foolproof.
Yeah, that'd be great. Because it's hard, too, because the umpire mentioned that Emma needed to stop the point right when that happened to challenge. But that, you know how hard that is? It's two all. They're going back and forth. It's not on the player. They should be able to finish the point, and then you can retroactively go back and be like, oh,
yes,
I'm so sorry. That was a double bounce.
They do that in hockey. You know, they'll go back like a minute for like an offsides call or something. Like, they can do it. They have the ability. Let's get the call correct.
They do it in football. If the balls, they let a play, you know, if there's a fumble, they let the play roll out. Maybe the other team, you know, runs it back for a touchdown. But if the knee or elbow is down, that's not a fumble.
Yeah, because that was a massive point. I'm not saying Emma would have won, but maybe she wins that game, goes up 3-2 in the second. Things are different. All right, quarterfinal number four, Madison Keys beats Svitolina. Similar to how Stevie was saying, Zverev is kind of like, somewhat quietly going through the draw, maybe not talked about as much. I feel like that is Madison Keys right now. She won Adelaide before this tournament. Now she's just rolled through to the semifinals, not talked about like a Sabalenka or a Swiatek or even a Coco Gauff. She's just going about her business, and she is into the semifinals. She has won now 10 straight matches down in Australia. I mean, and you know Keys, like, she's got a big game. She can hit the forehand, maybe not as big as Sabalenka, but probably the second biggest forehand in the draw. And I like what I'm seeing from her right now. And she looked good against Svitolina. How do you, Stevie, do you kind of agree with what I'm saying? Is she just kind of quietly been rolling through people? Do you like where her game's at?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the biggest piece to the next round when she plays Swiatek is getting out to a good start. Iga is an incredible, incredible front runner. So hopefully she can get out to a good start and, you know, keep that momentum going, because she has, you know, a title last week in Adelaide, now a semis here in Melbourne. So hopefully that momentum she can continue on. And I think it's very impressive that, you know, it's been a decade since she made her first semifinal there in 2015 in Australia, which is a cool stat. I mean, 10 years apart. I mean, she made one obviously in 2022 as well, but to make one 10 years apart from one another, it's just an impressive, impressive notch in a career. And Maddie is ultimately looking for a slam title. She has been close in the finals once. So hopefully she can, you know, eclipse a slam here, hopefully in the next couple slams, if not this one.
I think she has the game to win a slam.
Absolutely.
I mean, she's obviously been close, right? She's finals of the U.S. Open, handful of other semifinals. I hope that she, at the end of her career, I hope that she can get a slam.
Yeah, that's what... Everyone has said that, right? That she has the game to win a slam. Maybe that's put a lot of pressure on her. She hasn't been able to do it.
People said that about your game, John, and you let everyone down.
And I choked. Exactly right. I don't think many people said that, by the way. But she's obviously, you could argue, she might even say she's playing the best tennis of her career coming off an Adelaide win, which is a big, big event for them. A lot of, you know, it's a loaded field. Beat Pegula in the finals there, and now she's in the semifinals. She has that, the newly married glow has not worn off.
Totally.
She got married to Bjorn Fratangelo, a former colleague of ours, and she switched rackets as well from a Wilson to a Yonex, and she's playing confidently with the new stick. And she's I think she realized, now look, her draw is tough. Like, she has to play Swiatek to possibly play Sabalenka, but she's got a shot.
All right, we're gonna circle back here. We're gonna give predictions for all these matches. We've kind of touched on it. Let us know if you guys agree with us or not. We've got Sinner playing Shelton. It feels like the pod here is going Sinner in this one. Are we all in agreement?
I'm taking Sinner in four.
My heart says Ben, but I think the Sinner's a big favorite in this one for sure.
We got Djokovic, Zverev. I'm going Novak. John, who you got?
I'm going Novak as well.
Yeah, I got a fun stat here. I teased to Sam before this. So Novak's played 77 Grand Slams. He's made 50 semifinals. 50 of those 77, which is absolutely insane. And for a little context, the four of us have played 190 slams. and we've made two semis thanks to you guys. So just to put that for a little bit into context, like what an insane stat. You know, I don't know why that one kind of blew my mind, but yeah, I'm going to take, yeah, I mean, I picked Zverev to win the tournament, you know, earlier as a prediction, but I think Novak just gets it done. He's just got too much experience. So I think that one is going to be a phenomenal match. And so I think I'm going to take Novak in that one.
I thought you picked Alcaraz.
Well, prior, like our predictions to like,
okay, no. You can't pick him now.
No. Okay. That's what I'm saying. I picked him prior to, you know, to win a slam. I picked him, he wasn't available in the snake draft or else I would have taken him.
Good point. The odds makers agree with us. Novak is favored.
Slightly? Do you have the numbers on that, John?
No, not slightly. Like it's a little more than.
Also, if you're a better, like our predictions have been pretty good the last week. I don't want to like toot our own horns, but we're not getting everything right, but we're over 50%, I feel like, on our accuracy with our predictions.
Yeah, DraftKings, are you listening?
DraftKings, yeah, just if you like to bet, listen, watch this.
This is the podcast for you.
All right, the women, Badosa versus Sabalenka. It's Sabalenka one-way traffic in this, right?
Yeah, I think it's one-way traffic. I think just the experience and the 19 straight matches in Australia, two straight slams. Like, I think she gets this done with relative ease. And
yeah, I agree. You got to go. You got to go Sabalenka.
And then Iga Swiatek versus Madison Keys. Madison Keys is winning this.
I'm going with Maddie as well.
I'm calling the upset. I'm calling the upset in this.
She's going to be firing on all cylinders. She's going to have like 45 winners.
Yep. She's going to hit so many forehands so hard. It's just going to overwhelm Iga with power.
I'll take Iga to win this match.
Going with our heart. Sam and I are going with our heart.
I know, right. Yeah, you want Maddie.
I want Maddie, yes. But that's going to be, you know, we're making predictions here. I think just by virtue of how Iga looked against Emma, it was impressive.
Tough to back it up day after day, you know?
Yeah, true. We'll know in 2 days when we're back. our little housekeeping, our snake draft update. We've got Jack with 9 points, John with 8 points. Jack has Zverev left. John has Sinner left. So
let's get to the bottom of the barrel here, Sam.
Number one spot is up for grabs, but no one cares about that. They care about who is going to be the loser. It's either going to be me or Stevie. We both have 6 points, but I have Novak left. So if Novak wins his semifinal, I win. If he beats Zverev, I win. And Stevie loses. If Novak loses, then Stevie and I are in a tie for last, and we are going to battle the pickleball singles, which everyone wants. Surprisingly, a lot of people think you can beat me in the comments and on the poll. Just absolutely bonkers that anyone thinks that. But if you want to watch that match, cheer for Zverev.
Are we going to stream that?
We might stream it. We also might video it and then put together like more of an edited package.
A little compilation.
Yeah, with the highlights and the good points.
Of lowlights.
Lowlights?
Yeah, the good points.
There's going to be some lowlights.
Maybe the Isner can play the winner later in the year.
And Stevie, as Sam mentioned, that you're not physically capable of directing the ball left on the pickleball court.
He's not.
Stevie is.
Me?
That's what he said. It's on our Instagram reel.
If you thought Stevie's backhand was bad in tennis, look, watch his pickleball backhand. It's even worse.
That's not actually physically possible, so.
We also decided on the punishment. Loser of the snake draft will have to cold message 5 possible guests to come on the pod, and those guests will be determined by the other 3 people. So it's either going to be Stevie cold messaging 5 guests or myself cold messaging 5 guests picked by the other people. Also, we had some awesome fan comments after the pod last week. There's some shout outs. You know, people love the something major, nothing major. Number one tennis pod right now in my eyes. I don't know. I don't know if there's actual rankings, but we are the number one tennis pod. Janet Mascall, love it because it's like an inside locker room talk. We've got Manny, 4036. I'm so glad this channel come up on my feed. You watch this for years. Love it. You guys love it when I read the name because I can't do it.
We do.
Keyonday, 100% agree about the hair. Everyone agrees with us about the hair. It's all about the sex appeal. The guys who do it think they're sexy. But anyway, if you guys just keep leaving the comments, we love reading them. And like we said, next week, we're going to answer fan questions. That is it for the semifinal preview. We'll be back in 2 days. But if you guys want to follow us, we're on YouTube at something major. No, nothing major. Just something major for this week. Nothing major. TikTok, Instagram, Twitter, @nothing major. Follow us wherever. We are all over the place. You can't miss us. And finally, just one more thing. We got trivia, as we're doing every episode, Aussie Open trivia. Novak Djokovic has equaled one legend, 91.7%, for the highest men's singles winning percentage at the Australian Open in the Open era. Minimum 10 matches. Which legend did Novak just tie for winning percentage? Man, who else was good there? It's got to be someone that won it, played it like four times and like won it three.
I don't know.
I have no idea. I don't even have a good guess.
All right, I'll go with...
Minimum 10 matches.
I'll take Fed.
Yeah, Fed. I'm just going to go with Fed. When in doubt, go with Fed.
Yeah, when in doubt, go with Fed. I mean, I know Sinner's not the answer, but his winning percentage is pretty high.
Ooh.
Oh, that's a good point.
But I don't feel like that's the answer. I don't know. So I'll go with Yvonne Lindell. But I think it's Fed. I think the answer is Fed.
The answer is Jimmy Connors.
Dang it. I was thinking that.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah,
we stink.
Any trivia like pre-2000, we're so bad.
Yeah.
Novak can probably, if he wins, he probably jumps Connors. All right, that's it. We'll see you guys in 2 days.
You don't need to be ripped. You just need the right shirt. Epic Fits gives you a clean, confident silhouette. Snug on the arms, soft on the skin, generous where it counts. And with deals like $15 per tee, they won't break the bank. Visit epicfits.com today. Epic Fits. T-shirts that get it.